Kildare Today
with Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, as you've heard on the news there, HSE's Paul Reid reassuring parents and schools about changes in COVID-19 which come into effect from today. Confusion about the changes and concerns about a high case numbers in schools and conflicting evidence on that. According to today's Irish Times, the Health Service Executive's Chief Clinical Officer, Dr. Colm Henry, says the primary school children no longer having to restrict movements or be tested if they are close contacts of a COVID case was, what he's, to quote him, a big change and a significant signal, but it doesn't represent an undoing of some core public health protections. Let's hear more about that and the government's proposed campaign as well for booster vaccines. Associate Professor of Neuroscience at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology at Trinity College is Professor Tomás Ryan. Good morning again, Professor Ryan. Thanks for joining us, Tomás.
Good morning, Clem, and thank you for having me back.
Right, let's start with those schools, because that change is coming into effect from today, and we've heard, you know, so much conflicting evidence in recent times, and I've been looking at some of the reaction from abroad as well in regards to what's happening in schools. It's not very reassuring, I have to say, from the perspective that I read anyway. What do you make of it?
There is no conflicting evidence, as far as I'm aware. We know that children transmit this virus. We know that since the Delta variant and probably since the Alpha variant, that children transmit this virus as much as adults. We know that children can get COVID. In Ireland, 0.5% of children who've been infected with the virus have been hospitalized, the same number in the United Kingdom. And we know that children have suffered the effects of long COVID. There is a myth that's been propagated throughout the pandemic in Ireland, I think because NPHET and the government dug their heels in this, that schools are safe because they're schools. That's always been nonsense, frankly. Or that schools are low-risk environments for transmission. Internationally, the evidence is very clear that that is not the case. Schools are not low-risk environments for transmission, unless you put all the mitigation measures in place that you can. Now, the reason that we've had relatively low COVID infections in children so far in the pandemic, so about 6% of adults that we know about got infected before vaccination, and about 4% of children got infected before vaccination, was that at that time, schools were closed a lot of the time, but even when they were open, we were protecting schools by protecting all of society with either lockdowns or masks or social distancing or other restrictions. So now we're opening up and we're protecting society as individuals with vaccination. But the schools are vaccine-free environments, and case numbers are rising rapidly in children. Infections are rising rapidly in children right now. So the schools are a high-risk place, and it seems to me that the government are changing the rules for contact tracing in schools, are changing the rules for restrictions in for restricted movements in children, because the resources are overstretched, because they can't keep tabs on it, because they can't control it. And it's my fear that they're making up reasons for not doing anything about it. And Clem, what I'm saying is not at all radical, and it's not idealistic. What I'm saying is simply what the U.S. Center for Disease Control is saying. Dr. Anthony Fauci is very clear that children get COVID, that schools are high-risk environments for transmission, and that all children should be wearing face masks in classrooms, as they are in many parts of the United States, as they are in France, as they are in Germany, as they are in many other countries. And we need to be doing everything we can to reduce the spread in schools until we get vaccination for under 12, and that is going to happen in the coming months. But in the meantime, we are at risk of a lot of child COVID.
I see that under Department of Education guidance, children who had already begun a 10-day self-isolation as a close contact can return to school today if they don't have symptoms. Now, to me, this is the big X factor. This idea of placing the onus on parents or indeed on schools to decide whether the symptoms that a child has could be COVID related or not. Because it's not just the children we're talking about in schools, we're talking about the teacher cohort in particular, with the INTO and the Irish Principals, Primary Principals Network raising concerns, and also the greater family situation.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's a very difficult position. Whenever you hear the government talking about personal responsibility with respect to COVID, you have to be very careful. Because personal responsibility, as we've learned in many countries throughout the pandemic, is not sufficient to control COVID. We need social responsibility. We need government leadership. It's very difficult to say which children need to stay at home. In California, I was talking to colleagues there. If one child has COVID in the class, the entire classroom must stay home for 2 weeks. That's the way to manage this. But it's not just about symptomatic cases, Clem. It's about the contacts who are asymptomatic. Because we know that half of people who get the virus are asymptomatic and still spread the virus. But more importantly than that, 100% of people who have symptoms spread the virus for 2 or 3 days before those symptoms even appear. So what's missing from the way that NPHET and the HSC are communicating this situation is the point that all of the contacts who have COVID will start spreading it further in the classroom before you're even aware that they have symptoms. And that's why it's so important to isolate contacts. That's the basic rule of dealing with COVID. And the current decisions made by the HSE seem to be almost anti-science in the way they're carpeting over that. They're saying that's not a problem. And we hear about contravening evidence. There is no contravening evidence. There is, as far as I'm aware, no evidence to suggest that schools are low-risk environments for the transmission
and
of COVID.
And on that note, Dr. Tony Holohan has used those very words, saying that it's the right time to ease the measures, given the schools are what he calls a low-risk setting. Dr. Colm Henry has said from his point of view that the COVID-19 restrictions of having to stay at home for up to 14 days as a close contact were much more severe. He said that serious illness amongst children is very rare, and child-to-child transmission was, and I quote him, not a major driver of infection, and the classroom, and I quote him again, was not an incubator of disease. You obviously take a different view altogether, Thomas.
I think they're wrong. I think they're very wrong. We keep relying on these words like relatively low or not a great source of transmission. They're all relative terms, and relative to what? So yes, you're more likely to get COVID from a family member than you are in a classroom. But we know in Australia and America with the Delta variant that one spreader could affect more than half of the classroom in one day. So they're not low-risk environments. We also hear that children are at low risk from suffering the effects of COVID-19. They're at lower risk than adults, sure, but that's not low risk. 0.5% of children in Ireland have been hospitalized. When you have a low number of people infected, maybe that's acceptable. But if we keep going the way we're going, we could have a situation where instead of having infected only 4% of kids in Ireland with COVID, you could get a situation where 70 or 80% of kids are infected. And that will lead to thousands of pediatric hospitalizations if it happens, because you just have to multiply the percentage hospitalization rate by the number of potential infections. Now, hopefully that won't happen, because we might be lucky. NPHET are hoping that we're just going to be lucky and we're going to skate through this. And if we're not lucky, what will probably happen is they won't be able to hide the number of child hospitalizations. They're going to be able to hide the number of cases, because with the decision to wind down testing in schools, this is going to make us less aware of what's going on, which is why I don't support the winding down of testing. But you can't hide hospitalizations. So if child hospitalizations start to tick up, or if the effect of schools increases the spillover infections and breakthrough cases of COVID in the older adult population, then what will happen is we'll have increased restrictions in general, and or we'll close the schools. So they're hoping we won't have to do that either. But in my view, what they're doing is they're leaving a lot of things to luck and wishful modeling. And they're justifying that with, I wouldn't even say a selective interpretation of the science, but I would say a false almost interpretation of the science.
All right, and a very brief word, Tomás, in regards to the booster vaccines. We've heard the WHO saying, disagreeing maybe with that idea, saying we need, first of all, to get the whole world vaccinated. Whatever about the global picture, the plans to give booster vaccines to those who might be in vulnerable situations, who might be immunosuppressed and that, what do you make of that plan?
Well, internationally, it's a very complex situation. We do have to be getting the third, the developing world vaccinated. There is something disappointing about giving boosters to vulnerable people in developed countries when we could be controlling our COVID situation much better. But it's a very nuanced thing. I think globally we should be able to produce and distribute enough vaccine to do both at the same time. So I don't really have a strong opinion on the best way for Ireland to go forward. I mean, Ireland's a small country. The number of booster vaccines that we will be giving to the older population is relatively small by any international perspective. I think we've failed the developing world to a large extent because we were vaccinating middle and younger age and upper middle aged people well in advance of health workers being vaccinated in many countries around the world, and we're not going to be safe until the whole world is vaccinated because there's the risk of new variants coming in and derailing us. It's still possible, and I don't think this is going to happen. I really hope this is not going to happen. So we do exist in danger of a new variant coming along that puts us back to March 2020, and that's the main reason why we need to be concerned with vaccinating the entire world. If you look from a perspective of complete self-interest, but in terms of taking care of the situation in Ireland, we are going to see the effects of seasonality in the next month. As we start to feel a draft, people are going to move indoors. Activities are going to move indoors. The heating will be turned on. Less windows will be open. We're going to see less ventilation. We're going to see more COVID spread in the community. And at the same time, we're going to see a lot of vaccine breakthroughs. And the vaccine breakthroughs means you're fully vaccinated, but you still get COVID. It happens in about 1 in 20 people. So if you're vaccinated, it reduces your chances of getting COVID by about a factor of 20. But after about 6 or 7 months of being vaccinated, that reduces to a factor of 5. And if you're in an older or vulnerable category, that's putting you back into a danger zone. And if the force of infection is high enough, if we go into thousands of cases a day, then you're going to get a lot of vaccine breakthroughs. They're going to add up, and they're going to potentially put the healthcare system in danger. And we could be in for, if we're unlucky, a very difficult winter. And that's why boosters are important, because getting boosters to the older and the vulnerable will significantly reduce the number of vaccine breakthroughs that we're going to see this winter. But Clem, look, there's no substitute for just reducing the number of virus in the community. You can have all the bulletproof vests you want, but the best solution is really to get rid of the guns.
Underpinning and bookending the opening item regarding the situation in schools, Associate Professor of Neuroscience at Trinity College Dublin at the School of Biochemistry and Immunology, Professor Tomás Ryan. Tomás, thank you so much again for your time. And
thank you, Robert.
We wish you well in that assessment. Certainly we live in interesting times, as they say.
Now, I am joined on the line by Councillor Angela Feenley, Labour Councillor for Clanmaynooth Municipal District. We're going to be discussing the public consultations that are open on the draft town renewal plans for Ardkloch and Strafford. Good morning, Angela, and we'll begin with Ardkloch. There are three key areas, and beginning with the village centre, what are the key recommendations and the potential projects for that area?
Yeah, thanks, Ciara. Good morning, Ciara. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, this is the output, if you like, from surveys that were carried out last year by the council to get the feedback from, at the end of the day, Ciara, the people that live in the area know the area best, and they identified these. And there were 168 submissions from our talk, which was great response from people. And the key areas, as you say, identified are the village centre, St. Dad's National School, and the pedestrian facilities and traffic calming. And I suppose what really jumps out at us really is the amount of submissions around that whole idea of traffic calming. So it's really key to this new pedestrian crossings. I suppose a potential play area, footpaths, public spaces with seating, and enhanced cycle parking.
Okay, now if we move down to the village Green East Approach area of the village itself, the key recommendations there: reducing the carriageway width to minimum required to reduce speeds and slow down traffic. So a lot more in terms of traffic management.
I think so. I think a lot of people want the carriageway width to be reduced. That would also enhance the footpath space, but also encourage people to obviously slow down. That's key. And tighten the turning radius at the junction to minimum required to reduce the speed. So I think a lot of those, as you say, Ciara, are around getting people to slow down through the village.
So if we go down to St. Anne's National Schools, the recommendations or the opportunities there, Angela?
Yeah, absolutely. They're talking about introducing school zone gateway signage with the change in the road surface along the school zone to high friction surface, and revert heavy engineered bollards that are there at the moment to maybe introduce natural hedges or grass verges, and exploring the option of school branding ideas at the entrance and the railing and a banner, and I suppose potential to replace the existing bollards with pencil-shaped ones that we see a lot around the county now.
Okay, when we move to the third area of the village, and it's the pedestrian facilities and traffic calming, the key recommendations and the potential projects there, Angela?
Yeah, I think provide additional tree and planting, pedestrian paths. I think a lot of what you heard mentioned, I think it was Darren Turn as well, is connecting the areas with footpaths so that people can actually walk from one area to another, and explore the option of dividing park into functional zones like picnic areas.
Now, if we move to Strafford, there's four key areas there, beginning with the village centre at Strafford Inn.
That's right. The village centre, the Strafford Church, the filling station area, the National School, and of course there's no playground in Strafford. And I suppose, hearing as I do for a lot of families, the demographic has changed so much in Strafford that a lot of the parents are saying there's no area for children to play, and so that's really a key one that came up as well, Ciara.
Okay, and if we look at the filling station area, Angela?
Yeah, the filling station area, I saw that's quite busy there. You know, if you think about it, really, a lot of people pull in and out of that.
It's quite a small petrol station area, isn't it, Angela, to actually fill your car?
It is. It's very, very. And so people are talking about reducing the carriageway width, widen the footpaths, definitely improve pedestrian crossings and replace the surface, retain perpendicular parking in the short term. But really, there's a small public space with really, you know, it needs to be controlled, the vehicular and maintenance access, and tighten again the turning radiuses and replacing the existing worn-out raised table surface. So really, traffic calming is a big thing there for the village because it's quite dangerous and quite small.
Yeah, and as people can imagine, in the third area, which is Strafford National School, traffic calming is of extreme importance, and also
absolutely
increasing the footpath widths again.
Absolutely. So increasing the footpath width, as you say, provide traffic calming in the school zone. And, of course, signage is key there as well. People are suggesting also introducing no stopping zone because, obviously, if you have to stop, you should only stop in dedicated spaces for safety. Retaining disabled parking with additional spaces, widening the front of the school footpath and increasing the length of the school drop and pick-up bus bay, and obviously indicative location for school parking and dropping area. So Ciara, can I recommend to your listeners to go online and look at this, because I met a lady from Arklaw on Saturday and she was saying this looks fantastic. What's great about the plan, Ciara, is that it's very visual. A lot of people don't like too much text, so if you go into the plan, it shows you how the area looks at
yes
the moment, the existing, and then it does an artist's impression of how it's going to look with this enhancement. So I think I recommend to people to go in and make your submissions, because at the end of the day, your voice matters. Until the 20th of October, it's open until 4:30 that day.
Yeah, so Angela, just to let our listeners know, Ardclock remains open. The closing date is the 22nd of October at 4:30.
Yes.
Strafford's plan closes at 1:30 on the 20th of October.
Yes, right.
So there's a slight difference there.
Slight difference.
All information is available on kfmradio.com. We have the links to, as you say, the full plans for both, and the artist's imagination, I guess, is how it may look.
Yeah, exactly.
Angela Feeney, councillor for Labour of the Clanmanuth Municipal District. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Ciara.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Someone said, just rang in there and said, why don't we put on Marcus de Bruin and Professor Dolores Cahill, two well-known virus or vaccine sceptics. Well, we made numerous attempts to contact Professor Cahill there some weeks back, and we got no response at all to our phone, even though we were contacting on what we regarded as her actual mobile number, but there was no response whatsoever at any stage to our invitation to Professor Cahill to come on the programme. Anyway, Owen Beattie, I might take you to task. Oh yeah, Shannon says, are those millions of euro for TDs indicating the liquid cash that are in their bank accounts, or is it just a nominal value of assets? It's a value of assets, actually, Shannon. I want to take Owen Beattie to task here, because I just see that up on Twitter during the week popped a little image of Kildare Today with Clem Ryan and the photograph of Owen Beattie beside the name, which caused Shannon to say, Clem Ryan looks very young. Did he get plastic surgery? Yeah. Explain yourself there, mister.
There was a lot of people ringing in actually saying, geez, I didn't realise Clem Ryan was so good looking.
Oh, yeah.
And I had to say, no, that's me, that's me.
What is your photo doing beside my name? The cheek of you. I don't know. It's like Home Alone. You know, the parents go away for a weekend and the kids take over the establishment, and that's what happened here, folks.
I did you a favour. Everyone thought you were gorgeous.
I am gorgeous. Go on.
Yeah, we're joined on the line now by a Bellingsfield resident in Naas. She has started a petition calling for urgent action on the ongoing traffic problems at Piper's Hill. Her name is Niamh Esmond. Niamh, good morning to you and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen. Thanks very much for having me on.
This is something that we've covered over the last number of years, and it seems to come to a head every time that the school year begins once again. And it seems as though you're having serious problems out there on the Killeshea Road with traffic going in and out of the campus.
Yes, that's correct. Owen, I'm actually only a resident here in Bellingsfield myself for the last 18 months. I bought a house here and moved in March of last year. Initially, pre-buying this house, I actually did my research, and I know this was something that had come up online as being a major issue. But at the time myself, I was actually commuting to Dublin Monday to Friday, and I was gone out on 8 at 7 in the morning. So I didn't kind of put much notice to it. Since then, I'm now working from home, and I'm actually dropping my son to school down the town in St. Corbin's in Naas here. So I have to pass through this entrance on a daily basis in the middle of school time. So just to try and explain, to give a picture to people that may not be aware, this entrance is off the Naas to Kilcullen Road. There are two housing estates with the potential of 350 houses using this entrance. There are three schools with up to 1,600 pupils attending, and there's also the ETBI offices. Mm. So in the middle of school traffic, you have that volume of people trying to get in and out of this one set of traffic lights.
And also the fact that there's schools there as well, Niamh, means that these are not just, you know, cars who are stuck in traffic. There's buses and everything going in. You've children walking along the road, albeit there is a footpath. But this, as I say, and you're relatively new to the area, but this is something that has come up every single year. And I know residents in the area are calling for two entrances or a separate entrance, because they feel as though that would be the start to the solution of the problem.
Yeah, 100%. This is not our normal rush hour traffic. I've driven from Naas to Blanchardstown on a daily basis. What I've witnessed here is chaos. There's way too many cars, buses, people everywhere. It's just in the 45 minutes of school time, I have witnessed approximately six near misses with children, pedestrians crossing the road, children on bikes. Motorists are totally frustrated. I've seen parents let their children out of the car in the middle of the road because the traffic has come to a standstill. And the other thing that I need to highlight here, Owen, as well, is in the last 2 weeks, I've actually seen two ambulances leaving the estate here. One of them, I've actually seen a neighbour up the road here, a small baby getting into the back of the ambulance. And the reality of the situation here is, Owen, if an ambulance or a fire brigade tries to get into this estate or into the school during this 45-minute window, they will not get in. It's that bad. And this is where we're so concerned. It's either there's going to be a serious accident with a child travelling to school, or emergency services are not going to get through this entrance.
Final point on this, Niamh, and we will follow up on it on your behalf and also the behalf of the residents there in Bellingsfield. You've started a petition now calling for urgent action. Aside yes. from this other entrance, is there anything else in your view that could be done to alleviate the traffic? Because it's not only a headache for motorists, it's a health and safety issue as well yes. for these children going to school.
Yeah, like Owen, I have to be honest, I'm not qualified to make that decision. In my personal opinion, I think it should be a second entrance, but the qualified professionals need to review this and come up with a solution. And can I just say, Owen, like Kildare County Council did have this reviewed in the past, and their findings were that another entrance and exit weren't necessary, but I think... And they're saying that the traffic lights work well, but they accept that there is queuing at peak times. But what they are not accepting here is that a child is going to be seriously harmed travelling to school, or the emergency services are not going to get through this entrance during these times. Like, this is the key here, Owen. Mm. It's detrimental at the moment.
Okay, Niamh Esmond, resident in Bellingsfield on the Killishy Road there at the Piper's Hill campus. Thanks for bringing that to our attention once again. And as I say, we will follow up on it. And good morning to you, Niamh.
Thanks for having me on, Owen.
Okay, straight after the break, we're going to be speaking to the mother of a Kildare kid living in Sligo who's after been sentenced to detention because of his support for Kildare GAA. We'll have that after this short break.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay then, many of us do what we can to support our county, but how many are willing to effectively suffer detention? Imprisonment. Been held as a hostage for supporting the Lily Whites. Well, one young Kildare boy has done just that, but for his penance, he has been found guilty and sentenced to detention. Let's find out more now, because we're joined by Olivia Fitzgerald Murphy. Olivia's originally from Selbridge. Good morning, Olivia.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm very well, but how are you? You must be distraught, your son taken from you, detained for how long, I don't know, all because of his support for that Lily White jersey.
Yeah.
As he grasped the crest and said, Kildare for Sam. Tell us the background, Olivia.
Okay, sorry, you're making me laugh. Okay, so on Thursday, my son Jude, who is in sixth year in school, his school was having a jersey day. So Jude rocks up in his Kildare jersey, the only child who has any relationship with Kildare in the entire school. And that was fine. Just at the beginning of break, his vice principal came to him and turned around and said, are you the one who wrote Kildare for Sam in the toilets 3 years ago? And I naturally have raised Jude to be an honest child, so he went, yeah, no, okay, yeah, I did. So as punishment for his crime, he had to serve, he was supposed to serve 3 lunchtime detentions. His first ever detention for something he did in second year, and he only served one. They kind of like let him off for good behaviour.
Yeah. So tell me something first of all, Olivia, you're originally from Selbridge, are you?
Yeah.
And you've moved west to Sligo, Yates country.
Yes, we live in northwest Sligo now.
A couple of years ago. And your son's name again is, sorry?
Jude,
it is indeed. I was following you on Twitter over the weekend. Now, what I couldn't get over was over 3,500 likes and comments so far.
I know.
And people asking, was there not any statute of limitations?
That was actually started from another Kildare woman, Sinead. I went to school with her.
Right.
And she started about the statute of limitations, and that just kind of rolled as well. But no, not in northwest Sligo, there isn't.
Right, so he got called in anyway. So just go back a little bit. This happened a couple of 3 years ago, and he wrote on a toilet wall, was it, Kildare for Sam?
Yeah.
Sure, he was dead right. I mean, he was dead right about Kildare for Sam.
Yeah.
But maybe his artistic tendencies might have been expressed better elsewhere.
Well,
but what's
when
intriguing...
He did it, that's what I said to him. I was kind of like, that's fantastic. I admire your support for your county. But seriously, dude, in a school that there's no one else from Kildare, could you not have written something a little less obvious?
Yeah.
You know?
So 3 years, 3 years later... He wears the Kildare jersey in for school jersey day.
Yeah.
And they finger him on that basis.
Yeah. I think majority of the teachers knew it was him. I think, like, I have been told that after lockdown, all the students have gone mad and, like, their kind of school rules have gone out the window. So they're trying to kind of, you know, put manners back on them. So once they had proof that was due to did the graffiti, they're kind of like, well, we have to punish him.
Now, while, of course, we never approve of graffiti here, everybody, and we have to say, including Olivia, is taking this in the best possible spirits and in the most positive way. And the commentary on the Twitter account, all 3,500, was just unbelievably hilarious.
Oh, stuff,
in regards, he was being described as a legend. Well, our version of it was, we need to launch a campaign to free the Kildare One. In terms of that. But anyway, tell me when it came to the detention. He got 3 days at lunchtime, is it?
Yeah, he did.
Did he serve his sentence?
He only served one. After the first lunchtime, the VP came in and turned around and said to him, have you learned your lesson? And he was kind of looking at her going, yeah, I kind of did 2 years ago. And he was kind of, yeah, I'm really, really sorry. And she's kind of, right, go on, you're fine. Because I think she realised that it was a ridiculous punishment.
Yeah.
But they had to be seen to be doing something, you know?
But I have to admire their tenacity in terms of it taking 3 years to find out the culprit. And then when he's actually discovered approaching him. Was he born in Kildare?
Yeah, he was. We moved